I was born in Quebec, and we moved to Ontario, to Toronto, when I was a small child. And when I was there, my mother was seeking a way to stimulate me as a young child. She was wondering how, I was having certain difficulties in school, and she was looking for a way of stimulating my mind. She tried different things. I was working some art for a while. I was in dance school, and then she found this a choir where I started singing these wonderful pieces of all periods from Purcell to Britten, and it really stimulated me and brought my grades up in a incredible way. And so I guess from that moment I was stimulated by the early music very much. I loved Purcell and I loved Handel, but in any case I sang in that choir for many years, for 6 years, and it was like a professional children's choir, so we got the opportunity to sing at the opera, we got to sing amazing concerts, sing in the Matthew Passion with the Toronto Symphony. And so I was very stimulated as a child with all this music making. Then I decided to, when I went to university, I decided I would be going in art history, but somebody heard me and said, you should really be singing. So I changed my plans and left the art history program at McGill University and went to the Montreal Conservatory. Did my studies there for another 6 years. And I guess because my voice was developing in a certain way, the Baroque repertoire was most suited to my voice at that time. And I started singing for certain conductors. I sang for Bernard Labadie with Les Violons du Roi very early on. I was still a student. And he heard me, and of course this was his speciality. He was doing a lot of this repertoire at the time. And I guess it's one thing led to another, and one person heard me and another person heard me, and people were hiring me to sing this repertoire, and I guess that's kind of, I fell into it in a way, but it was also suited to my voice at the time, so I think it was the best choice.
Was it possibly also because the musicians you meet who are interested in and developing research in early music are also some of the most fascinating and fun people you can talk to?
Yes. Well, I guess it maybe has something to do with the fact that their repertoire is not so well known. There are a lot of discoveries, of course, and unearthing things that that's not in the standard repertoire, that's not in our ears, in a sort of our collective ear, as it were. And maybe that it makes it more interesting, more challenging, just kind of off the beaten track a little bit.
And you get to make a lot of great personal choices with the music. I mean, you can read descriptions of how such and such 18th century singer sounded, but you know, it's up to you to make choices with ornamentation and affect and things like that.
For sure, but also, you know, it has really changed because, of course, with the early movement, there was a lot of things were more, people were sort of applying these rules, and people have now moved a little away from that and sort of breathed more life into it. And of course, the singing has changed since the beginning of the early music movement. In the beginning, there was a lot of singing with straight tone and maybe a lot not so open singing or opulent singing. And now, definitely in Europe, people have moved away from this kind of singing, and it's more, you know, natural way of letting the sound vibrate. Of course, there are affects and ways of interpreting certain phrases, and of course, the ornamentation has greatly changed. And I think it's definitely more interesting now because it's not so staid in its requirements. People are moving more towards more openness and and open to interpretation.
Is this something you can discuss over a wonderful meal and wine with Bernard Labadie? And
well, Bernard and I go back a long, long way. As I said, I was still a student when he was hiring me. And he's, I guess, I owe a lot of the beginnings of my career to him because he really helped me along. He hired me a lot, and we explored a lot of things together. And of course, Bernard is very well versed in all this repertoire, and so it was a real exchange. We were able to, explore this repertoire together, and I was able to give him what he was asking, because he has many. He's quite demanding in what he wants, but also that's very good because, of course, he obtains a lot of quality in his work. But sure, we've discussed it many times.
Well, I am so glad that you have chosen to commit your singing projects to CD on numerous. You have a really impressive discography at this point, but I imagine it's the live concert schedule really keeps you going. I know you were just recently overseas.
I was in Malaysia. I was actually singing some of these arias that I'll be singing in Kalamazoo, so along with Mahler 4th. So, of course, my repertoire has moved also. I'm doing a lot more Mozart now, which is very nice. I'm moving away from all that Handel that I've been doing all these past. I did a lot of recordings of Handel operas, and a lot of concerts in Europe. And so now it's nice. I'm moving towards a lot of Mozart.
What's it like to approach Mozart from an earlier era, going from Baroque to classical?
Well, I think it's kind of the natural way to go, because, of course, that was the natural progression in history, wasn't it? Mozart studied with Haydn, and Haydn studied with Porpora. So I guess the Porpora is definitely the missing link between Handel and Haydn. And you definitely hear it. I recorded a disc of Porpora a number of years ago with Alan Curtis. And when we recorded that music, I felt it was like a discovery for me, because it was definitely that missing link. You know, we've always heard a lot of Handel, and then we hear, you know, we move on to Haydn, but we don't hear the transformation or the evolution. And in Porpora, there is definitely the evolution towards something, towards the classical era. And that was really inspiring for me to do. And so with all of those links tied in, it's a normal progression for me now to add on a new link with Mozart. Of course, I've been singing Mozart all my life, but now to, I released recently a CD of Mozart arias, and to approach it from that sense, it's definitely from the it's a clearer approach. It's a, of course, with all of the agility that I've been doing all through these years in Handel opera. It's the real normal progression, and it's not approaching Mozart with a lot of heaviness. It's approaching Mozart with a lot of lightness and air, and of course there's a solidity to it, but there's also something that's moving very much with open wings. And it definitely feels like a natural progression, and it feels very comfortable.
Can you be more specific about the stylistic difference? My oversimplification would be that the Baroque era had a great deal of filigree complications, and then there's this cleanness to the new era.
Yeah, of course. That's a perfect interpretation. definitely. I think that, of course, there's a lot of discussion about how much ornamentation can we add to Mozart. I think Mozart was definitely moving towards a through-composed something that was not altered by the musician or singer. Of course, in the Baroque era, there was a lot of added ornamentation, and for the singer to add a little bit of himself or his personality or his or her personality. And I guess some composers may have not liked that so much. Handel didn't like having his pieces altered too much, of course. Like in anything, you know, these things probably went overboard and some singers just went, you know, completely nuts and added too much ornamentation. And so maybe this was in opposition to that with Mozart, where there's the ornamentation there is definitely written in the score. Of course, there are occasions here and there in cadenzas and themes that come back in the music where you can add a little bit, I think, of something. And I have a feeling that, you know, there was probably something definitely left over from the Baroque era that sort of spilled over into the classical era. We always try to think, oh, well, you know, it was this way in the classical era and it was this way in the Baroque era. But, you know, I don't think it was like that. Things were moving, progressing into, you know, eras were progressing into each other.
Right, but Mozart didn't just reinvent music.
No, it was definitely coming from Porpora. You can hear it in the music. So, of course, they were influencing each other. And, of course, Mozart is it has a pure approach. And because it's so pure, it becomes ethereal. And I think that's what a lot of singers discuss when they say that Mozart is so difficult to sing, because it's so pure and all about the liquid line. But it's definitely, like I said before, it's a natural progression for me to be moving towards Mozart. And having had all of that experience in the very florid Baroque era, having done a lot of Vivaldi and a lot of Handel, of course.
The Liquid Line sounds like a great album title.
It does. But it's definitely so in Mozart. But, you know, I'm not approaching it, and I've said it in different interviews, I'm not approaching Mozart from Verdi and Puccini. I'm really approaching it from, you know, the natural progression in history from, you know, Vivaldi and Handel and Porpora and moving forward.
One of the things I love about next Tuesday's program is that we're going to hear, you're going to be singing music from an early, I think, an opera by Mozart, but I've never heard
of it. It's a pastoral. Well, you certainly heard La Medusa Costante, which is a very famous aria, but the other aria from that same role is not so well known and not sung very often, and it's more florid. So it will have, definitely, the role has two sides to it. It has a very florid side, and it also has a very, more the Mozart that we know, the liquid line.
And the second half of the program, you'll sing one from much later in his catalog, Kirkel 505.
Yeah. He wrote that for Nancy Storrs, who was the creator of Susanna in Le Nozze di Figaro. So, and of course, he had a very special relationship with Nancy. I don't know how special, but definitely, I think he wrote in his catalog that was, that aria was for Nancy and me. So I guess there was something very special there, a very special relationship. And you can hear that in the aria. It's the mingling of the piano and of the voice. It's great beauty, and of course more of that liquid line, and like I said, the Mozart that we know and the Mozart that we love.
Another thing I love about the program is that it will mix not only Mozart, but music of George Perl, who's a 20th century composer. And it doesn't take a progression from early to late. It's just all together, allows the pieces to contrast off each other.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I won't be involved in those pieces. I'm just involved in the Mozart, but I'm sure it will be a very interesting program. I'm looking forward to it. Of course, we're not living in the 18th century. And so I think we can't live like it was then. You know, life was different then. And there wasn't internet, and there weren't fast cars and planes and trains and automobiles. But it's so I think we have to put it in today's context. But there's still, of course, a lot of beauty to withdraw from that and a lot of beauty to take in.
Where will you be jetting off to after you appear at the Gilmore International Keyboard Festival?
I will be home for a little week. I have another chamber music festival here in Montreal. And then I'll be flying off to Milano in Italy, singing there Mahler 4th. And then I'll be singing another Handel opera in Europe. I'll be in Halle, in Handelstown. And I'll be singing also in Versailles, in the King's Theater in Versailles. And then I'll be home for a few weeks. I have a very full summer. I'll be singing at the Glyndebourne Opera Festival in England. So I'll be quite busy, and a very full fall as well. So I have a lot of music to prepare when I come home in June.
Oh, I wish I could follow you around the world like that.
A lot going on.
Yes, yes. Well, folks can follow your busy schedule at carinagauvin.com. And, yes, of course, hear you in person on Tuesday the 29th at the Gilmore International Keyboard Festival. And believe me, I'll be keeping tabs on your career, and especially if you come back to the Midwest. It'll be wonderful. And, Carina, thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.